All right, so this is Megan Fox. You're listening to Malama Choir Radio on KKCR. Today, one of my guests here is Jeremy Makepa from Aina Alliance, and I'm really excited to have you because I don't know a ton about what you're doing, and I'm excited to learn a lot more. So thanks for coming today.
Yeah, Megan, thanks for having us on here.
Cool. So very cool. You're actually calling in from the fire station right now. So not only are you doing all kinds of amazing community things, like you're like a real life hero too in the fire station. So this is in your blood, yeah, like drawn to this work.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it just about it. I try to think about people can be their own hero, yeah. A lot of calls, station 911 about we just had tsunamis, we had fires in Anahola. Just trying to think of ways that people can be so that they don't have to call us, on themselves.
Oh, I'm losing you. I'll keep it going, but I'm losing you like a robot-y voice. Do you know if your internet is kind of laggy over there? I'll just
Is
tell them to break current.
my headphones. Let me try this without the headphones.
Okay.
That works better. Okay, how's that sound?
Oh, way, way, way better. Awesome.
Okay, yeah, we'll go without the
Okay.
headphones and maybe we should
Okay.
start all over.
Yep. All right. So this is Megan Fox. You're listening to Malama Choir Radio, and I'm here today with Jeremy Makepa from Aina Alliance. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having us on. Looking forward to talking to you.
Yeah, and I see that you're calling in from the fire station, which is pretty cool. You're like a real life hero over there, not only doing great community work, but that's what you do as your regular job too, huh?
Yeah, hopefully I don't have to run away and respond to a 911 during this call, but I just try to think about ways that we can share information about being your own real life hero, ways to rely on yourself and your skills, ways to prepare your family, and ways to rely on the community in case the fire department is overwhelmed and we can't respond to you.
So is that what inspired you? Maybe you can tell everyone what Aina Alliance is about and how it got started, 'cause I've seen like the cars disappearing from Anahola, things looking real nice. You guys have been real busy. I'd love to learn about what kicked this whole organization off.
Yeah, sure. In 2020, I was the fire prevention captain for Kauai Fire Department. And what that is like the community risk reduction person for the whole island. And at that time, Anahola was probably the busiest place on the island as far as wildfires. I think we had more wildfires in Anahola than the rest of the island combined. And if you put that together with, like you said, all of the cars, abandoned cars, and dumping that was happening in the area, it was really a safety hazard for our firefighters to have to respond to those calls and breathe in that toxic smoke or get trapped in unknown areas by fast-moving fires because of unknown blockages on the road, and just for the community having to breathe in that toxic smoke blowing right into their homes. For me as the fire prevention captain, I thought that was the biggest problem fire-wise for our island. So I focused on that and I uncovered a lot more that needed to be done. So I started our nonprofit Aina Alliance to become kind of my pet project to see how we can solve some of these issues from the community end instead of relying on government. And we've expanded into hazard mitigation, sustainability, community meetings on disaster preparedness. We got some cultural stuff going on and getting kids out there learning about the heavy equipment we use and the oceans protecting the oceans and pollution. So just expanding into a lot more than just hazard mitigation, but doing a lot more now that we have the area to do projects.
Yeah, so you brought up the term wildfire, and I know that's always like, for those of us not in the fire industry, we're like, is it because the wildfire means it got out of control, or does that mean the source is wild? Because it feels like not necessarily sure what that means versus this seems like I guess in Kauai in general, there's been a lot of like purposefully started fires, especially here in Lihue. Where I'm out of, do you consider those wildfires, or is it always when it hits like buffalo grass? Like, what's that definition mean? And
Well, there's structure fires where a single building is on fire, and then a wildfire, or usually it's more to do with a vegetation fire where it's a lot of brush that is overgrown that gets going pretty fast, and then we can't really contain it. And there's a lot of land like that on Kauai that was old plantation, cane fields, or agricultural use land that is no longer agricultural use, and nobody's really stewarding that area, and it gets out of hand, and then we don't know where it's going to run wild and possibly burn other things. So
yeah.
that's kind of how I look at it.
Yeah, I mean, Maui was a really sad, awful example of that. Yeah, and we don't want to see something like that happen here. I mean, do you feel like land back movements help with that? Because it does seem like so much of this land that's just not being utilized, it's not being farmed or taken care of, and like people, didn't you guys like adopt a whole parcel with DHHL and like are stewarding that for care? Is that part of your main project or?
Yeah, that was the idea. Well, first we got the county involved and looking at the hazard, right? We tried to separate all of this land that was constantly being burned. So the area in Anuhola that we take care of now is 400 acres of land. So
Wow.
it's pretty much everything from Kealiakai to Anuhola Bay on the ocean side of the highway. And in that area, when we did a drone flyover, we found between 300 and 400 abandoned cars in the area,
Wow.
and totally overgrown, mismanaged. And like you said, like just having someone to steward the area, I wanted to find out if we took on that challenge, if we could do anything about it, especially with my expertise in firefighting and fire breaks and fire prevention. If somebody with the training to do that tried it out and then tried to make a template for other areas to use, maybe we can get more stewards of big land areas to take care of it, and we have a template to follow. So that's kind of what the idea that I had going into it. And it seems to be working pretty well for us.
Yeah, that's crazy. 400 acres. You guys are just mowing every day. Like, how do you even keep 400 acres clear?
Yeah, I mean it's definitely not clear,
Yeah.
but it's manageable in a way that if a fire breaks out, at least the fire trucks have access to put out sections that are not too large, and they have ingress and egress to get out if the fire gets out of hand, if the wind gets too strong, they have a way to get out. And if it's small enough, they have a way to get in and put it out without it jumping, several hundred acres of land. And we have breaks in there that are set up. So it was difficult because before you can mow anything, you got to get the cars out of the way, right? There's
Yeah.
cars, there's appliances, all kind of dangerous stuff. And you already talked about the Maui fires. I mean, a month after the Maui fire, we had one in Anuhola that rained down ashes on the neighborhood. And luckily, we had those fire breaks set in there because after it was all said and done and put out, I counted 68 abandoned cars burned in that fire, and countless appliances and trash that we had to haul away. So it's still a work in progress, but we're moving forward pretty quickly.
That's crazy. I mean, it must take a lot of like kind of scientific knowledge to decide fire breaks here, roads here. Like, are you looking at grids with drones and trying to decide how to attack this? Because that's a ton of acreage. How do you approach it?
At first, we kind of looked at the existing roads because that would be the easiest way to do it. A lot of it is old plantation roads already. So just widening those roads and reestablishing those access points made natural grids. And then if it was too big or the fire load is too much. By fire load, I mean if there's too much rubbish or heavy vegetation, then we needed to cut additional fire breaks to slow the fire down in case it caught on fire. So, and then the topography of the land, the valleys, wind direction. There's a lot of things to look at when you're trying to plan this out. But we also got help from NRCS, which is our Natural Resource Conservation Service, to create a conservation plan that backs up what I already thought for the fire breaks, but also brings in ideas for controlled grazing, soil conservation, and looks at endangered species to make sure we're not taking away habitats as we're clearing these lands as well.
Yeah, and I know that sometimes they even have grants for like agroforestry if you wanted to replant like green strips as like living fire breaks. Have you gotten into that kind of like restoration of the habitat so that they're more naturally resistant, or is that a thing?
Yeah, part of our conservation plan that they helped us develop is putting in more resilient plants, especially along the shoreline, because a lot of soil erosion happens when you clear fire breaks, right? You're taking away the vegetation and the natural soil erosion plants that would hold that in. So now we try and reduce that by adding in natural plants like Naupaka along the shorelines to hold that in.
Yeah, and I mean, most of the stuff you're probably taking out is all invasives too, right? All the grasses, the buffalo grass, guinea grass, all that stuff is, even the Halicoa. I mean, so much of that is just kind of trash plants that got brought here at one point and kind of took over and get dry and crispy real easy, right?
Yeah, totally. So those are the ones that we target: guinea grass, buffalo grass. I think there's a lot of Halicoa in our area, and the seed pods on those, when the wind is blowing and they catch on fire, they can carry for almost a mile. So depending on
Wow.
the wind, those are the ones that start the fires ahead and jump the fire break. So trying to get rid of those, or at least trim them down so they're not so tall and thick. That really helps.
See, so listeners, if you're listening in, that is your invitation to kill all the Halicoa you can find. We need more Halicoa hunters. And I've heard people do cool, useful stuff with it. I've never seen it myself, but it would be awesome to see a demand for that really to get wiped out. And I'm going to take a quick break for our station break here, and I'll be right back. All right. Thanks for listening to KKCR. This is Megan Fox with Malama Kauai, and I'm here talking to Jeremy Makepa of Aina Alliance, who has been doing an amazing job cleaning up a huge swath of Anahola and the surrounding areas, 400 acres under stewardship. You said you removed 300 to 400 abandoned cars. I know that's like a real hot topic on Kauai, and people are always complaining about the cars, complaining about the system. I mean, what solutions do you see so that we maybe get less abandoned cars in the first place? Like, why are they happening, and what can be done to have that stop occurring, you think?
Well, we haven't taken out 300 to 400 cars yet. We've taken out about 110 cars, but at first
That's
count,
huge.
we had 300 to 400 cars. But
Wow.
sometimes it feels like we're just making room for more cars to get dumped because we'll move one and then somebody will dump another one. So, like on our property, what we had to do is create barriers so that people can't come in there and keep dumping cars. We needed to create a perimeter, and I feel like by doing that we made the dumping spread out to other areas of Anahola, so it's not really helping the problem island wide. Now we were just getting cars dumped in other places. So I don't know. I think there needs to be something done government-wise to incentivize people to bring them in and make it a more heavy punishment for people who are just dumping it on the side of the road, because that I'm sure that eats up the police department's budget when they have to keep tagging all of these cars and pay for them to be hauled away. I mean, I think it would be easier if you just incentivize people to take their cars in, and it takes away a lot of workload and makes people happy if they can get a little rebate by doing it.
Yeah, I know they used to have a program for that. Now it seems like it's few and far between as funding comes in, or it used to be like you could get a free tow to the scrapyard for recycling, but it's, maybe it was just a pilot. I know I have a funny story where we have a Malama, we had a Malama Kauai truck that the engine literally lit on fire as I was driving through Anahola. So I pull over, stop the truck. I'm like, oh my God, it's gonna blow up. Get out of the truck. The fire's gone. I left it there for a couple of days because it was like the weekend, and then I needed to tow it. And then I went back there to meet with someone to tow it, and it was gone. And I was like, part of me was like, well, that's a problem I don't have to take care of, because I didn't know how I was gonna fix a car that lit on fire, right? So part of me was kind of impressed that somebody actually got it moving enough, whether they drove it or towed it. I didn't know at that point. And then my buddy who lives on Anahola calls me. He's like, Meg, someone's driving the Malama Kauai truck all around Anahola, whipping them in the middle of the night at 2 a.m. I saw them, and I was like, oh man. And they did. The police ended up calling me. They did find it abandoned back there in probably your area. And it was interesting. And like they caught the kid, and the kid was young. He was like 19 years old. And Justin Collar was the prosecuting attorney at the time. He's like, do you want to come and say anything? And I was like, I think you should punish him by making him go to mechanics class at KCC, because whatever skill that guy's got, skills, whatever he's doing, he might be going down the wrong path. But to get that car working and all those cars and be pulling parts or whatever, I mean, there's some talent out there. It's just misdirected. Yeah, if people are doing that, so.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the stuff that I've seen happening in the middle of the night with headlamps on, I mean, these guys should definitely be making money in different ways using their mechanic skills instead of trying to just take little parts and use all that time. Should be directed towards business if there's a mentorship program like that.
Yeah, I know everybody complains we don't have like a junkyard to pull used car parts from. It's like, oh, we do. It's just underground. But that makes it really hard that Anahola happens to be the dumping yard for these skeletons that are left and whatnot. I mean, how do you guys even get rid of that many cars? Have you had partners that help come in, tow companies, or does the scrap yard, the metal recycling down in Pui, do they help process these? And that 100 cars is a lot to get rid of. How do you guys do that much already?
Yeah, so I mean, the most difficult part is getting them off the beaches and up to an area where the tow trucks can actually load them up. So the way we got to start, because a lot of times it happens where either people are stealing them, they strip them, and then they take the parts, and then sometimes they even burn them so that they can take the copper out. Or they just run the cars until they die, and usually they're hiding out in some far off valley or beach that you can't really get to, and then the car dies way down in that area, and you're like, oh my gosh, how am I gonna get this car out of that space? So now you gotta get heavy machinery to try and track that car out of that valley or wherever it is, tow it. You got to do all kind of special stuff just to get it out to a main road. And then when you get it out to that main dirt road, then you got to haul it all the way back up near a main road where the tow trucks can hook it up and then take it all the way to Puhi Meadows. So we've had several partners that have come in and volunteered to get them off the beach, but taking them away, the amount that we have is so much that we just go directly with Puhi Meadows and recycling, and they find the tow companies that are available that day, and then they organize all of that stuff, and then I just organize the contractors to go down to the beach and pick them up, and we set up a transfer area on property where we can get them staged so that the tow trucks can come in and easily load and go. So when we do our big cleanup events, we can take away between 20 and 30 cars in one day out of the
Wow.
transfer area. Yeah, but
Yeah.
getting them up to the transfer area, that's a whole nother challenge. So
Yes. So if anybody wants to help, definitely the guys with like large machinery, tow companies, anybody who wants to kind of pitch in to clean up. 'Cause I know like when there's already abandoned cars in an area too, it's almost like a magnet for more abandoned cars. And if spaces are clean and cared for and watched and loved by the community, they're a lot less likely to just get cars dumped on them constantly. And I think that point of pride is really important for people. They do want nice spaces for their community and their kids, and not worry about their kids stepping on all kinds of rusty, broken metal that got left somewhere when they're running around. I mean, if people don't have those big machinery things to help you, how can like the average person on island make a difference by working with your organization? Do you use like physical labor and just humans, or is it all machinery?
well, what's left behind is little stuff that the machinery won't pick up. So like our last Earth Day cleanup, we had the big machinery come pick up all the stuff, and then Kapaa Middle School students came and with their little hands and gloves and garbage bags and picked up all of the stuff that they could grab. And having over 100 kids come and pick up all that little stuff made a huge difference in a short amount of time. So there's always use for people, even if they just want to go walking along the beaches and pick up trash. I mean, we got mountain bikers that are going through and taking care of the trails, and they pick up trash along there. We got Surf Rider Foundation coming in usually once a month, and doing beach cleanups for shoreline debris. So there's a lot of small groups that come in, but just having somebody like you said who loves the area and a contact point like me, it's been a lot easier for people to feel like they have permission to come in and take that area under their wing for stewardship.
Yeah, no, I think it's awesome because there's so many private landowners, and there's been so many different approaches on like how to steward spaces. Like, some people have been in the I'll ask for forgiveness, not permission, and just gone and kind of like owned spaces until the landowner said, "Oh, look at the great job they're doing. Let's give it to them." So, how difficult? I'm assuming it was a little bit easier for you because you are in the fire department. You had that fire prevention captain role to kind of build that bridge with like the government and the large landowners, where they really took you seriously coming in saying, "Hey, here's a problem and I have a solution." Was it difficult to get anybody on board for some of those stewardship agreements, or was everybody pretty much, especially after Maui, like, yeah, this could save us all, right?
I mean, that's what I was worried about at first, was we were gonna be Maui, like the amount of trash and fire load in Anahola on the windward side of the community, where if it burned, it would blow right up into the houses and just have a domino effect right through the neighborhood. I was worried about that the most. So that's why we got started. And I initially just thought we were gonna do a cleanup and then let it go back to Hawaiian Homes, and then they'll take over. But I mean, if you look around the state at the great job they're doing with all of the lands, I didn't feel confident that all of our work was going to be maintained. So working with some of my neighbors, we made an alliance to try and ensure that somebody was going to care for it. And because we did all that work already, Native Hawaiian beneficiaries, Hawaiian homelands, kind of made sense. So when we put the proposal in to Hawaiian Homes that we wanted to care for the area, we had to jump through kind of a lot of hoops, but it's been working. Yeah.
They're tough to get land from for sure, and it's cool to see it, on so many other islands, especially. I know Kauai's a little feisty, so they don't try to pull so much crazy stuff with us as they do other places sometimes. But I mean, they have some questionable leases on other islands. They're renting to Walmarts and things like that. So to see lands get into the hands of Hawaiians building their own community is really what that those lands are for, right? So I mean, now that you have this lease, other than protecting it, like, do you have other dreams for what you guys are going to do there, what you're going to turn it into, or?
Well, I mean, this year we kind of looked at how we can use this area. We're working on a Makai management plan. We got a grant from the Hawaiian Homes to figure out the best use of the land until they're actually developed for housing. And like you can see with the tsunami warning that we had and people had to evacuate. Like I live down there in the village and I saw all my neighbors packing their stuff and trying to move to high ground. And the area where we start is actually right above Anahola Bay, is the evacuation area. So one thing that I'd like to see is it used as an evacuation zone. Like if you look at what happened in Maui when all of those survivors had to find a place to go, they didn't really have anywhere to go. Like if we can pre-arrange areas where people can at least go to, and then supplies and equipment can get dropped off, and then now they can get temporary housing and supplies set up pretty quickly. I mean, I think that's a pretty good use short term, just disaster planning and preparedness for the area, and then trying to get food situated, growing our own food like Malama Kauai is trying to set up, getting programs to train people to have that kind of farming set up so we can be self-reliant. We got some indigenous health funding through OHA that we're gonna try and do some Hawaiian medicine and healing activities on the property so that if people had to move out there, we don't have medicines. There's a Hawaiian medicine workshops that we're gonna hold, and then we even got a kind of an off-grid housing program that we're starting coming up shortly here, so that if we needed to pop up these houses, how can we run them off grid without having to have the full infrastructure needed on a normal house, just emergency housing.
Nice.
Just integrating that all throughout the property.
Very cool. Because I mean, just from watching farming over the last decade on Kauai, if you don't pull out the buffalo grass and put something else in, it's coming back, right? So it's like nature's gonna plant something or you plant something. So it's cool that you guys are thinking about, not only just taking it out, but not continuing to fight it for the next decade and finding something more useful and maybe more fire safe to put in their place too. That's going to make a big difference long term, just so you don't have to repeatedly do the same things over and over and over, right?
Yeah, and just thinking about food sovereignty as well, right? Like you got to get meats too. So we already got the grass that grows pretty quickly and the halicoa, and the animals love it. Like we just put some sheep in the property to eat some of that stuff down. Man, the sheep just love the halicoa. The horses love the guinea grass. So just integrating some of that. So we got not only agriculture with vegetables, but now we got meat on property. Just trying to figure out what is the best balance on property. And then teaching people about it. Yeah. So if the boats stop coming, what are we gonna do as a community to survive? Or even if you get cut off, like with the tsunamis, if the bridges were broken, what is your community gonna do around the island for food and medicine and housing, to help your people short term as we wait for government help or whatever it has to happen. There's going to be that time lag that people need to be their own hero and rely on themselves and their community until additional help arrives, and that's what we're trying to set up.
That's right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Thanks for listening to KKCR. It's Megan Fox with Malama Kauai Show, and I'm here with Jeremy Makepa from Aina Alliance. We were just talking about some preparedness work, and you had mentioned livestock grazing on a lot of that acreage, and I love that because there's been a lot of livestock land loss with a lot of local ranchers, especially on the east side. I think that's something that's becoming more and more common. So, and they do a great job. I have to say, when we are now leasing land from Bette Midler up on Malka of the bypass road. And as I was looking around, one thing that really stood out to me is like, I found this beautiful parcel, like 87 acres, and it's not covered in hollyhock. It's not covered in albizia. And it was because they had cattle there. Bob Farias guy has been running cattle there for years, and it makes such a difference. Like, because those hollyhocks, those baby albizia, they get big real fast and they get thick real fast. And then, you can't mow that area anymore because the stumps that even left behind after you cut them are so big. And, we wouldn't have that good farmland to turn into an ag park over there if the cattle hadn't been there. So it's such a cool way to manage land. Like, why are you going to go do all the work when you can just like run some stakes across it, right? Smart. I like it. Are you guys working with the Cattlemen's Association at all and started talking to them, or is it something you guys already have enough ranchers you know already that probably want to help out, or?
The hard part about our project is we're on a 30-day lease, right? So at any time, Hawaiian
30
Homes can
day?
come in and say, oh, you know what? We need this property for whatever. So we're kind of just doing it with faith that we're gonna keep maintaining it. So to invest a lot of money into the fencing and all of the infrastructure needed for that is kind of risky. So we haven't gone that far as to take that risk without a long-term lease. So we kind of just have animals tied down with pegs. When we can find a little bit of funding for some fencing, we do. But we did get a partnership with Hawaii Wildfire Mitigation Organization through a grant program statewide for wildfire prevention. And I made a proposal for controlled grazing in some of our problematic areas, and we did get that grant from them. So we'll be putting in some fencing on property to try and test out this controlled grazing theory and see how it works.
Nice. That's very cool. I mean, a 30-day lease. Ooh, that's painful. Good for you guys for sticking it through and having faith and, working on that. I know it's really hard to get on that Aina over there anyway, so you're doing a good job getting your foot in and cleaning it up. So I hope that turns into a little bit longer. I know people need housing and stuff too, but like you said, it's dangerous, and let's see how fast those houses have been getting built. You might have
Yeah,
quite a
and in the
time.
meantime, like if these areas are supposed to be meant for housing, like in the Anahola Regional Plan for Hawaiian Homes, a lot of it is supposed to be made for housing. So by pre-planning a lot of this stuff, we can start clearing those areas and getting them ready and having them prepared as disaster evacuation zones until the point where Hawaiian Homes is ready to pull a trigger on building a new subdivision, and then it's ready. It doesn't have a ton of cars piled up on them. It's not a toxic waste dump where it's burned 20 times in the past, and now the lot that you're getting is just the soil is all polluted. So I mean, having somebody on there to steward it and kind of plan how they're gonna execute this build out is pretty advantageous for Hawaiian Homes. The problem on the area is just getting access to water. There's no water there. Even for the grazing, we would have to haul in water with tankers and stuff like that to get the all of the animals watered. Any crops that you want to grow there's no water system in the area. So that's probably our biggest problem.
And I mean, that's probably going to prevent them from developing there too, though, isn't it? Like they need water to be able to put in more housing. Have they given you guys a timeline on when that will even happen? I mean, I think that's a question everybody has, right? Is like, when is the next land going to be released, or whether it's like the ag lots on the Malka side there of the road, or down there? Do you have any
Yeah, so I
timeline
think the
for that?
ag lots are probably going to be the next section that is going to be released because there's no infrastructure going to be provided on property, and that's why we're going to do the off-grid housing workshops so that people who actually get to select lots up there, we can go through and practice and see what works well, get pricing, and maybe make a group that can go up there together and do clearing and kind of plan out a co-op maybe to get all that stuff together so that as a group you have everything you need instead of trying to go up there individually and have to buy the equipment, figure things out. You can practice on our property and get it all together. And then once you know with all of your future neighbors what a great plan is, then you can just go up there and execute it.
Yeah, and see what works and doesn't work. I lived off grid for many years. I still am off grid for solar power. I love it. I don't even want to live in a real house. But the solar especially, you have that big solar lot right next door to you guys. You know it's a great spot for solar, and to be honest, like the DHHL water rates are kind of ridiculous, even for the ag lots. And when you do get water pumped in, it's re really expensive. So, have you guys started looking? I mean, I know rainfall isn't entirely massive there, anyways, but have you looked into like catchment systems for irrigation purposes, even, and different components like that? I nerd out on off-grid living, so I'm really excited about this.
Oh, I love it. We've tried some different stuff. Hawaii Community Foundation gave us a grant to try and put up some small structures to try and measure water. And then we also worked with Oregon State University and West Oahu's STEM program to figure out some of that stuff as far as catchment. But just in that area where we're at, there's just not reliable water. Like as far as rain, when it does rain, it dumps super hard. Everything gets muddy, and then it doesn't rain at all for, weeks. So the tanks would have to be fairly large, and the catching structure would be fairly large so that you can catch as much as you can, store as much as you can, until the next big rain. So it's kind of a difficult area for water.
Yeah, and the weather's just gonna get worse and worse the way things are going. Anahola is one of the areas that unfortunately, not only was it kind of left a little bit junky from the, not a little bit, but quite a bit from the plantation days, like as far as like trace remnants of like lead and arsenic in the soils and things like that. But then, just the lack of rainfall and turning it into a desert when it used to be a really green, productive area. So I feel like over time, with climate change putting more pressure, I mean, I'm a big fan of agroforestry for even bringing more water and rainfall to the area and like capturing carbon and cooling the land. And you can actually change environments like that. I have a dream program that hasn't gotten funded yet where we just wanted to pick one town, and we would pick Anahola because it's like the tightest knit community, and just dump like $1 million worth of fruit trees across the entire town and everybody's neighborhoods and everybody's yards, whoever wants them, wherever. And then let's see what happens to the hunger and food insecurity rates in that community. And then
Yeah, let's do it.
let's also see what happens to the temperature, like the average temperature, the average rainfall, because like reforestation, they've done reforestation of deserts in other countries that you can completely transform like an entire landscape. Like kind of nerdy stuff. I won't go on a tangent, but Love to sit down with you sometime and talk about what you're
Oh,
doing.
totally. My wife was like, why don't we make an orchard so that there's shade and
Yep.
then, you know, the animals can eat underneath. And then, you know, maybe we can make a pond for water catchment and run it through the area. And I'm like, wow, that's a great idea, babe. Let's try it. Let's pick a spot. So
Right, and
we're
there's
actually going
lots
to
of
try it in a small area. So we'll
right,
see
and
how it goes.
there's lots of great trees that do good over there. You know, you guys are known for killer mangoes, you know, some other frou-frou-y things like pomegranates and figs and stuff like that tend to do good in dry areas until you can get more moisture coming in and stuff. So, you know, you might be able to grow stuff no one else can because it is a different type of environment, but. Now's the best time to plant, actually. Coming up is the fall, and you get that little bit of rainy season to come in to kind of percolate in and get the trees settled before they hit their Anahola summer the year after.
We're gonna try it. I got a 5 acre spot that I want to test that idea out. So,
Nice.
we're actually clearing it. We're clearing it now. So we'll see what happens after the rain, all the trees grow in. I'll bring you by and you can check it out.
Nice. I've planted a few orchards over there, right across the street from you guys. None of them are still alive, though. So. You gotta maintain. So I'm glad you guys are there to maintain. I'd love to see that be a success. But so that's very cool. You guys already have some of those plans. What about, do you know the timeline? I know you mentioned it's gonna be sooner for the ag lots on the north side of Anahola. Have they given any timeline suggestions on something like that?
From what the regional plan statements were, it was supposed to be done already.
Right.
So they're already behind on what the issuing was, but I think what they're wanting to do is make sure people aren't growing cars up there. They're actually
Yeah.
growing some agricultural stuff. So maybe they're trying to plan it out for success of the people who get to choose those lots.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know what the hold up on it, but it's been on the books for at least 2 years already. They're supposed to issue that out.
Well, I mean, it's really hard when to even get up there enough on the list to get released. You're already going to be like 60 or 70. How many of those 60, 70-year-olds are going to farm?
Yep.
You
Yeah.
know?
So I mean, you're already old, and then now you got to think about living off grid.
Yeah.
And then you got to clear it and do all this work. I mean,
Yeah.
probably there's a lot of them that can pass them down to their family members that are strong enough to do it because farming is hard work. I'm like, I never did farming. And then for me, this is like a giant science experiment for things that I've never
Right.
done. And then so like having sheep and trying to grow an orchard and all that kind of stuff, I don't know anything about it. But it's fun learning and it's fun talking to people who do know and getting information from them and going, oh, this does work. Cool.
And Anahola soil does not set you up for easy success over there
Nope.
either. I mean,
No.
it's like hard pan, rock solid, super nutrient dense, but you have to put air into it before you can actually, the plants can even get to anything. It's so much work. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen so many like augers break as in Anahola. I'm surprised you don't find like broken augers next to all those cars back there because I mean, it is tough even just to dig holes to plant things or
I mean, even just pounding in T-poles to put the
oh.
fencing in, we're like, oh my gosh, why is it so hard to penetrate this ground? But it's just like solid packed clay that is just super dense. So trying to grow stuff in there, we
Yeah.
need heavy equipment to do the work. So I mean, it's tough. Yeah.
Yeah, and I
Definitely, if you can do this project here, you can do it anywhere. So if we have success, then you
mean,
know it's proven.
yeah.
Proven fact, because it's hard.
And you know, you can talk to some really cool soil nerds. Like, there's a lot of like really cool soil people around Hawaii, like guys that like eat dirt and they're like, don't call it dirt, it's soil, and like get really obsessed over it. But there's some cool skills about like regenerative soil building too that I think in Anahola especially. Like I had a friend in Kekaa and he said his dad was one of like the first awardees when they gave out some ag lots on that side. And he didn't move in for like 5 to 10 years once he got his lot. He just teamed up with all of the tree trimming companies, and he said, yeah, use my lot as your dumping ground, which obviously with CRB around, we're not living in that same world as back then, but he basically had like all the guys just chipping and spreading his whole entire property. By the time they moved on, they looked around and his lot was like a foot higher than everybody else's lot around him. And you could actually like stick your hand into soil and get soil where everybody else had this hard pan stuff. So, you know, again, that's part of the difficulty of like the CRB infestation, the coconut rhinoceros beetle, is because, I mean, we've had a couple of our grantees worked on with the county to release some funds to help like do some preventative work and kill breeding sites. And there were a few people in Anahola that already had it and that was impacting their farms. So it's there. So that's always scary because mulch was kind of like the key to building soil. And now that's almost like now it creates a different risk, right? It might not be a fire risk, but now it's a infestation risk. And Anahola is known for having good coconuts, you know, so it's
I
tough.
mean, I looked at that solution too, and when I brought it up to NRCS during our conservation plan, they said the same thing with the CRBs. We can't be bringing in outside mulch, and I'm like, oh man, how are we gonna get this soil back if we gotta depend on just hollyhock and guinea grass on property?
Yeah.
It's gonna be tough.
It is. I mean, and part of it's you know, they have a process. You chip it super fine and then you make it 2 inches or less thick. So no piles. You just spread it super thin and you just have to keep broadcasting it, which is almost impossible if you're trying to mow someplace too, right? But I guess that's where the livestock can help. I don't know, land management's complicated. I gotta give it to you guys. Saying you'll help out on 400 acres is crazy. But someone's got to do it, and I'm glad it's a fire prevention captain that decided to take that one on. So, you know, I'm sure everyone in the community is really grateful. I know when they, you know, there's a lot of visible cars down there. I mean, we don't see the 300, 400 that you did when you did your assessment, but, you know, all those ones off the roads and by the beaches and stuff, like people are seeing them gone. And, you know, if people want to help with those kind of efforts, do you have regularly scheduled work days? Are there, do you do something quarterly or monthly, or is it just it takes a lot more coordination than just like a net cleanup that you can host every week? How do you guys organize your days?
Well, we're all volunteer organization, so we don't have any employees. It's pretty much like when I got time to do something, I'm like, oh, okay, you know what? I don't have any projects. I mean, I not only do I do firefighting, but I got my store in Kapaa, born Hawaii. So
Oh,
operating
great.
that business for a clothing company and doing events off island and stuff like that, and then trying to manage events for this. I usually just depend on other organizations to set it up, like Surf Rider, or I just kind of have them figure out what they want to do, and then I'll organize stuff on our property to match up with what they're doing. We usually try and do something for Earth Day or Prince Kuhio Day ourselves, and then usually in September, I try and do something just because it seems like that's when it's the hottest and we got to do some wildfire stuff. So I try and do something in September so that we can get a lot of the vegetation and junk out before it gets wet and thick and we can't find it anymore as the grass grows in again. But we're supposed to get our first couple employees. We got a couple of grants from OHA and DHHL. We're gonna f hire our first employees this month, and then we'll see what they put together as far as events so that we can get those going.
Yeah, and they're great. I mean, they host like their Net Patrol every Wednesday. Is that they're on it. They have a nice crew work built out over there. So cool. If people do want to keep in touch, they want to follow you guys. Are you on social media? How can they find you to do you have a newsletter? How do they sign up to hear about these work days you're doing?
No, I've been totally slacking on that part of it. We just
Hey,
bang stuff out ourselves and do the heavy lifting. But
that's
I do
how.
have I do have a website that's not very well maintained, and I'm hoping that our new employees can get people updated with newsletters by the time this airs. So you can check us out at inaalliance.com on our website, on Instagram and Facebook. It should be Ina Alliance or Ina underscore Alliance, something like that. I don't know. I don't even check it. So if you
I'll
do
find
find it
it
and you
and
message,
tag it.
it'll pop up on my phone, and I'll go, oh, somebody's trying to message me. Okay, I'll check it out.
Cool. Sounds good. Anything else you want to let everyone know? Share some inspiration?
I'm just thinking about being prepared yourself. I mean, we've already seen the tsunami last week. We had some brush fires going on. We've seen what happened last year. We had some hurricanes pass by to the south of Hawaii already. Just be prepared and learn as much as you can so that in case the daily heroes like the firefighters and police can't show up. Because they're overwhelmed, at least you can take care of yourself and your family until the time when outside help can come.
And I love that preparedness stuff. What do you think are some lesser known tips? There's always a like, keep 2 weeks of food and water and flashlights and batteries. And there's a lot of stuff people think about, but you've actually seen a lot of people in active disaster. What are the things that maybe people don't think about preparing for or supplies that they need that they don't think about? Does anything come to mind there?
The one thing that I saw that kind of bothered me, but kind of gave me hope was I saw somebody evacuating from our Anahola Village area in their wheelchair,
Oh.
and somebody was, this was a kupuna evacuating in their wheelchair to higher ground, and just thinking about it from a higher perspective, maybe from the government side. Or a community group or something like that. Like, how do we make sure that the kupuna in the neighborhoods can get out? Like we can prepare ourselves and stuff like that, but a lot of times they're left at home and people are at work and there might not be anybody to evacuate then during an emergency. And how do we make sure that they have enough medicine, if they're going through dialysis or they need special medications for diabetes and stuff like that for a longer term event. How do we track them, know where they are, make sure they got out, make sure they got the medicines? Like there needs to be a way to assist those kind of people trying to live on their own but not able to. Like check on your neighbors, see who how you can help. And that was what really inspired me from that last tsunami was one of the neighbors who lived in higher ground went down to check on this auntie and actually helped her up in a wheelchair and gave her a place to stay. So, just even if you can prepare for yourself, see who else you can help.
Yeah, that's major. And I think especially neighborhoods that are more diverse, that are more newer, people don't tend to know each other and take time to always get to know their neighbors. And that's the thing, like after watching like the floods up in the North Shore, what happened in Maui is like, the kids, the kupuna, those who are disabled, those who have special needs, there's people that rely on generators for things to keep them alive. There are really special needs kids, even special diet people, like real, not like, oh, I like to be gluten free, but like real serious here, like could will die, with certain foods. I mean, people don't think about helping all those folks prepare. And that's where, building community, getting to know who your neighbors are and like doing those like general who's in your block? Do you even know everybody in your block and area and who might need help? Thinking about those kinds of things is major and it should be on everybody's checklist because, then which kids might be left home because they got a single mom and she's out working, and you want to have her number. You're not going to like look like you're kidnapping her kids, right? But if something's going down in your home, you want to be able to have those relationships. And it's something I feel like so many people in society have lost, but it's really what makes us strong, and it's what makes us respond great. Like that example with someone going to scoop Auntie, you know, that's because they knew Auntie. They knew she needed help, right? So they went and checked on her. And that it was actually after the flood on the North Shore, just closing note here, when the FEMA guy came down, Michael, the head of FEMA, he came down and he looked at what was going on. And he's like, man, Kauai's got this. He's never sees like you, Kauai could write a book on how to respond to a disaster. And he was trying to figure out why. Like, why was Kauai so special? Aside from not waiting for the government to come in and save the day, right? You know, a lot of it was just neighbors helping neighbors right away, like no resolve, and that people knew each other and cared for each other. And that's just something that we should never go away, because these types of events, disasters, whatever, they're going to be more and more and more frequent. And the more we know each other and care for each other, the better off we're all going to be, right? That's even what our food work is about, is really about making sure in the worst of times that we can take care of each other. So, right on.
Yeah, totally. I mean, Malama Kauai has been leading the way as far as food sovereignty and trying to figure out ways for disaster preparedness in that way. We're coming in from more of a disaster preparedness, just getting ready from hazard mitigation. So we're happy to follow in your footsteps in a little bit different style of sustainability and community building, but happy to talk to you today about it and see where we overlap, and hopefully we can work together in the future and try and build upon each other's success and make an even better program for each of us.
Yeah, I got a lot to learn from you. I'm gonna have to bug you and pick your brain. You have a lot of knowledge here and done a lot of great work. So thanks again for joining us today. Is there anything else you wanna shout out or let anyone know before we close our session today?
I just wanted to give a big shout out to our funders who's made this happen. I mean, even though we talk about Hawaiian Homes not getting the land out to the people faster, I mean they've helped to fund a lot of our projects for hazard mitigation and going into the future for workshops to train a lot of people. So big mahalo to them for stepping us and letting us steward all this land and try it out. And see what Kanakas can do if allowed to have land. Also to OHA for providing funding for us to do a lot of the cleanup work as well. And then going into the future with our indigenous health, with Hawaiian medicines and stuff like that. NRCS, Natural Resource Conservation Service, for providing the technical experts who have helped to make our conservation plan. Hawaii Wildfire Mitigation, who's funding our wildfire controlled grazing project starting this month, and then trying to see how animals can help with fire control, and all of our volunteers who've come in and picked up rubbish and help do little stuff on the property. I mean, so many people to thank, but mahalo to y'all for making us successful, and we'll see how we grow.
Sounds good. Thank you so much again for joining us. We'll talk soon. Aloha.